Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
That's fire coming from the other side of the street now. Outside the embassy. Shooting across the street. You can see the tracer bullets going past.
In January of 1968, Viet Cong soldiers overran the U.S. Embassy in Saigon, a brazen move that highlighted the frustrations of thousands of Americans who were fighting in that country. 2 years later, in 1970, with the war effort spiraling downward, Creedence Clearwater Revival's Run Through the Jungle was everywhere on the radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. In 1970, Dale Lindwall of Wausau was a platoon sergeant with the 3rd Brigade, 260th 9th Infantry Division, leading a four-man fire team doing search-and-destroy missions on the Mekong Delta. In 1970, Lynn Kalmus Cole of the Village of Maine was an Army nurse at the 71st Evacuation Hospital in Pleiku. And in 1970, Now Shua Zhang of Wausau was a lieutenant fighting on the American side in the secret war in Laos. He is now president of the Wisconsin Lao Veterans of America. Our guests on Route 51 today saw the history of that war as it happened. We're going to hear their stories and listen to portions of a new documentary by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick called simply The Vietnam War. You can also see a one-hour preview of it tonight, that's Thursday night, at 7 at the Center for Civic Engagement on the UW Marathon County campus in Wausau, followed by a panel discussion hosted by Wisconsin Public Television. As always, we invite you to join the conversation. If you served in Vietnam, or you remember the protests on American streets, or you've got questions for our guests about their experiences, you can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Put a comment on our website, wpr.org/route51. Again, that's our website, wpr.org/route51. Dale Lindwall, it's been about 50 years. Is there even a day that you don't think about the war?
No, actually not. There are so many things that bring back memories of that period of time.
Lynn Kalmus Cole, the same question. It's been 50 years. Is there ever a day you don't think about what you went through at that evacuation hospital?
No, every day. There's something, like Dale said, that makes you think.
And now, Shua Zhang, you are repatriated. You're in Wausau. But 50 years ago, you were fighting in your own country, fighting against the communists and fighting on the side of the U.S. government. Is there ever a day that you don't think about it?
Yes, now sometimes I still think about that one too. And during midnight, I drink that one a lot. I think about PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome? Do you suffer from that?
No.
You don't, but you know people who do.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. Dale Lindwall, have you suffered from post-traumatic stress syndrome from your experiences in Vietnam?
Well, I didn't realize until probably about, in about 04, something like that, that some of the issues I was engaged in my mind came from that. That's the title they put on it. And I've been dealing with it since then.
So it took decades for you to realize how that war affected you.
That's
psychologically.
Correct. Yes.
Lynn Kalmus Cole, you saw an awful lot at that evacuation hospital. Has it affected your psychological well-being?
Yes. I have PTSD also, and it's a daily struggle to keep the anger and things under control.
Let's listen to the start of the new Ken Burns and Lynn Novick documentary, The Vietnam War. And again, it will be shown tonight, an hour-long preview of it. at 7 o'clock at the Center for Civic Engagement here on the UW Marathon County campus in Wausau. The first voice you're going to hear is Max Cleland. He's a former U.S. Senator from Georgia and a disabled Army veteran.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one?
Viktor Frankl, who survived the death camps in World War II, wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. I've walked and I crawled on six. You know, to live is to suffer. To survive is to find meaning in suffering. And for those of us who suffered because of Vietnam, that's been our quest ever since.
And it's a hard rain's gonna fall.
America's involvement in Vietnam began in secrecy. It ended 30 years later in failure, witnessed by the entire world.
And what did you see, my darling?
It was begun in good faith by decent people out of fateful misunderstandings, American overconfidence, and Cold War miscalculation. And it was prolonged because it seemed easier to muddle through than admit that it had been caused by tragic decisions made by five American presidents belonging to both political parties.
That's the opening of the Ken Burns and Lynn Novick documentary, The Vietnam War, the comments of disabled Army veteran and former U.S. Senator Max Cleland. The narrator goes on to list the casualties: 58,000 Americans, 250,000 South Vietnamese troops, over a million North Vietnamese soldiers and Viet Cong, 2 million civilians between the North and South, and tens of thousands more in Laos and Cambodia. Dale, let's start with you. Reflect, if you could, on those casualty figures and the words of Max Cleland that those who suffered through the war are now struggling to find meaning from it.
Well, we did what we had to do to serve our country and to help those who were unable to fight for themselves. So we went there, you know, with a good cause. But our government didn't back us up, and that's what's hard to accept too, because a lot of lives were lost because of some of the politics that came about, the rules of engagement and so forth, that were ridiculous, and we could never understand why they handcuffed us the way they did and didn't allow us to do what we were trained to do and allow us to basically survive.
Lynn, same question to you. Reflect on those casualty figures and how we can find meaning from them.
Well, like Dale said, there were so many things that perhaps caused a lot of the casualties, and I had to see things like that. And, for instance, a couple of times we got the North Vietnamese patients in, and we had to stop everything, and the GIs had to wait, and we had to do them first because they wanted to interrogate them. And we knew that afterwards, once they had their information, they would kill them anyway. But in the meantime, some of our GIs might die because we had to stop and take them first. So things like that were very hard to take.
And now, Shua Zhong, thousands of people died in your native Laos.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and during the secret war in Laos, beginning in 1961 to 1975, since I stopped in 1970 to 1975, and that's see during the fight each other, and at night or sometimes in the day, this is see a lot of casualty and eyes, and that is stronger and is very hard for myself. Sometimes I think that I no choice to live there, or I no choice life in to safety, but I'm pretty lucky. So during that time, five years in this, since my father and my uncle, my brothers, and a lot of friends died that time, see this casualty, that's very hard for and myself.
And you were fighting in your own country, unlike Americans who would go over to Vietnam. You were fighting your own countrymen.
The first one is we fight for a protest our territory in our country, and second time we have the blood in Ho Chi Minh Trail and north to south, and
The Ho Chi Minh Trail ran north to south.
Yeah,
it was a major supply line for the Vietnamese in the south.
Yes, right. And we protest the American leader in Limassai in 85 and not Laos too. And also we rescued the American pilots who shut down in the border.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is in the four missions that we did.
You rescued many American pilots who were shot down.
Yeah.
Across the hallway from the theater where the documentary will be shown tonight, we've got a display set up, a Wisconsin Public Radio and Public Television project called A Face for Every Name, showing a picture for every Wisconsin man and woman who lost their lives in Vietnam. It's quite sobering, and I would suggest if you're going to the showing tonight that you take a moment to look at that display and reflect on what we lost. Peter Coyote, who's the narrator of the Vietnam War documentary, said in the clip that we just heard, this is a quote, "America's involvement in Vietnam began in secrecy. It ended 30 years later in failure witnessed by the entire world." The film's producers, we've been told, argued about whether to include that line, that the war ended in failure. Dale, do you agree or disagree?
Well, you know, it's hard to use the word failure. However, we didn't accomplish what we set out to do. And like I say, with the losses that we had, it is hard to accept, you know, that we basically walked out of there without – you know, doing what we were sent there to do, because that was our passion. We weren't there just to walk around. We were there to do what we needed to do, and it is. I guess the term you use, I don't know, but it wasn't a success by any stretch.
What do you remember most about being a platoon sergeant with the 3rd Brigade, 260th 9th Infantry Division?
Well, actually, I started out as a platoon sergeant just because our platoon sergeant got hit. And then an E5 is typically a squad leader. And what we did is we went out in 4-man fire teams, so I became a team leader. But we would go on search and destroy missions, and basically what you're doing is you're walking in, you're tracking down the enemy, you're walking into their path, and you are involved in conflict, and your objective is to destroy their assets and their resources and capture or kill them, whatever it took to accomplish that mission. And that's what our task was primarily the time that I was there.
And Lynn, what do you remember most about serving as an Army nurse with the 71st Evacuation Hospital in Pleiku?
What I remember most? Oh, heavens. Every day there were countless casualties. There was no break. We worked minimum of 12-hour shifts, often on our knees with the flashlight because we were hit with rockets and mortars almost daily. The bravery, I just want to say the bravery of the young men who came in, it disturbs me when I hear some of the other, you know, people talking about the, like World War II veterans and stuff, they're the best, they're the tops. What I saw how our guys were, and I don't think anyone was braver and worked harder to do what they were supposed to be doing than our men.
And now, Shua Zhang, same question for you. What do you remember most about what it was like for you personally to fight that secret war?
And the secret war is in during I fight the Vietnam, not Vietnam, means that that's in during day and night, and a lot enemies that come to a surrounding us, you know, so we fight each other. And usually every day, as much as see the casualty and see the people who and got wounds in the armies, that or that is a very struggle for my life. And during that time, it's very hard for myself.
It was a struggle. It was hard. And you saw a lot of casualties, yes, in that war.
Yes.
Let's play another clip from the Ken Burns and Lynn Novick documentary. Here are the comments of a Marine, Roger Harris, who was stationed at Con Tien, a U.S. Marine Corps combat base located near the North Vietnamese border. It was a scene of very heavy fighting in 1967 and 1968.
I've never been as afraid. In fact, that's why I'm not afraid of anything now. I mean, there's nothing you can do. It's just listen to the sounds of the rockets coming over, and you just pray that they don't land on you. People get blown to bits, literally blown to bits. You find a boot with a leg in it, right? And so is the leg white or black? So who was the white Marine that was here? Who was the black? So then you try to remember and you tag it and put that in the green bag. And that's what goes back, you know, as Marine Lance Corporal so-and-so and so. But sometimes you're not even sure because the body has literally been blown to bits. And the only thing that's left is a foot or a piece of an arm. I had the opportunity to call my mother, you know, and I was telling my mother what was happening over there, and I was telling her. And I said, you'll probably never see me again because we're the most northern outpost that the Marines have. You know, we could literally could look right into North Vietnam. We could see the sparks when the guns fired on us. And I said, everybody in my unit's dying, you know, and I probably won't be coming back. And my mother said, no, you're coming back. She said, I talk to God every day, and you're special. You're coming back. And I said, Ma, everybody's mother thinks that they're special. You know, I'm putting pieces of special people in bags.
It's Roger Harris, a Marine who was stationed at Con Tien, a U.S. Marine Corps combat base located near the North Vietnamese border. Dale Lindwall, what do you make of what you just heard?
Well, one of the hardest things when we, myself and others, got over there was what you ran into as far as what he's talking about, the casualties, policing up what was left of some of the individuals. And, you know, we were in close contact with the enemy on many occasions, and we had to have artillery called in actually on our positions to deflect them. So that is the hard thing to still accept. And I think what happens is as we were there longer, you start becoming hardened to what you see. And I think part of the PTSD that occurs years later is it surfaces again.
Do you have a story you could share with us about something that you were involved in that has stuck with you through the years?
Well, we were near the Cambodian border. I got there basically within the month that we were legally allowed to go into Cambodia. And so we were working up in the Plain of Reeds and the Parrot's Beak and the Fish Hook and the Black Virgin Mountains in that area. And we would be in and out of the border. And we were in a torrential downpour. And we were dug in to the red clay. And our foxholes were full of water. And we had the VC were trying to target us with mortars. The only good thing about it is they couldn't tell any more where we were at than we could tell where they were at. But we would hear a mortar tube go off. We'd duck under the water in our foxhole until the mortar round hit and then get up, and hopefully nobody was staring in the face. And we did that all night. And we thought none of us thought we were going to walk out of there. None of us did.
What was that red clay like trying to walk through it?
It was just slimy goo, and then, like I say, all the water, and you know, it was just, and you're soaking wet for, hour, you know, 12, 15 hours, and we weren't able to get medevac in. We found out we were too far to get artillery support. Well, we couldn't get medevac because of the weather, but we couldn't even get artillery support because we went too far away from the fire bases. So we were basically in a no-win situation there, and with the weather and everything, it was just, it's something that that just trying to survive that, let alone somebody trying to kill you, is what is you know, is haunting after all these years.
Lynn Kalmus Cole, your reaction to what you just heard on that tape, but also, how did you find the will to go forward dealing with the suffering that you encountered every day at the 71st Evacuation Hospital?
Well, just like Dale said, you get hardened. You have to do things. We made jokes like if a burn patient were coming in, we'd go, oh, we're getting a crispy critter, or you call, oh, a horrendoplasty. We're going to have a horrendoplasty case. One of the things that haunts me, it was in my hooch, just returned from work one night, and one of my hooch mates was dating a chopper pilot, and he was there waiting for her. So while he was waiting, we were talking and we were joking and just to pass the time till she came. And the next morning I was at work, and when we get fresh body bags, they were placed outside. And I had never, ever gone and looked at them, never. But for some reason, there was one little small body bag. And I was just drawn to go out there, and I looked down, and it was his name. And time just stood still, and I don't know how long I stared at it. And I never went back and looked at another body bag again, but that's one of the things that haunts me.
Now, Shua Zhang, your leader in the Secret War, Major Wai Kai Vu, am I pronouncing his name correctly?
Excuse me?
Your leader, Major Wai Kai Vu, thousands of Hmong Lao people were killed on the front lines. How did you find the will to keep fighting?
During the fighting, he is my chief battalion. And when we fight each other, then a lot of enemies surrounding us and got killed. He and also a lot of soldiers in there. And we find that that's a main battalion got killed. So we try to protect our territories a couple of days. But we cannot get his casualty. After later 14 days, tried him back to and fight again to get his casualty. And a lot of soldiers there, and also the younger people during that time too, because we don't know, we just stay in the village and they come to surround and they cover us, you know, during that time, so very hard for us. But finally,
you were surrounded in a village.
Yeah, surrounded in a village. But finally, myself and many my friends, we get back to get his casualty too.
It's Lieutenant now Shua Zhang of Wausau, also Dale Lindwill, an Army combat veteran and platoon sergeant, and Army nurse Lynn Kalmus Cole. Of the Village of Maine. These are all central Wisconsin folks. And we're talking about the new Ken Burns documentary, The Vietnam War, which will be shown tonight, Thursday night at 7 at the Center for Civic Engagement on the UW Marathon County campus in Wausau, followed by a panel discussion hosted by Wisconsin Public TV. I'm Glenn Moberg. We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question or comment on our website, wpr.org/route51. Here's Billboard's number one single of the year for 1968 by Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler.
Back at home, a young wife waits. Her green beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man, they'll test.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, presenting the 2017 Birds in Art exhibition, with all new artwork by 114 artists through November 26th. LYWAM.org.
Pick up a gun, we're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, like a two, like a three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven, open up the pearly gates. Ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
Country Joe and the Fish taking us into our next segment of Route 51 as we continue our conversation with combat veteran and platoon sergeant Dale Lindwall, Evacuation Hospital Army Nurse Lynn Kalmus Cole, and president of the Wisconsin Lao Veterans of America, Now Shua Zhong. I'm Glenn Mobert. Country Joe McDonald recorded I Feel Like I'm Fixin' to Die in October of 1965. By the time he performed it at Woodstock in 1969, the anti-war protests had grown into a movement of millions of young people, but while they marched in the streets, others were marching off to war. Dale and Lynn, you both started your service in the late 60s. Dale, you were drafted in 1969. Lynn, you joined the Army Nurse Corps in 1968. That was during the height of those anti-war demonstrations. Dale, what was your attitude about going off to serve in Vietnam when so many people your age were telling you not to go?
Well, I actually didn't hear much about that around here. And as we were in basic and AIT, that was not something that we really heard that much about. We really didn't hear much about it until we were coming back.
Well, it was all over the television.
I know, but we didn't have a chance to really – when you're in training, you're kind of out of the mix. You're not in the news network, so to speak. So, you know, we weren't really aware of that at that point.
Lynn, same question to you. What was it like going off to serve when there were anti-war demonstrations happening back home in America?
Well, like Dale said, I don't think I actually recognized it till we ended up in overseas. And the one thing, though, I had – a friend of mine talked for three other nurses into joining. I was at Mount Sinai Hospital in Milwaukee at the time, and they had talked us into joining. And I had friends who had said, don't go to Vietnam. They had just gotten back, and they said, you don't want to go there. Don't join the service. And so I talked to the recruiter several times, and every time he insisted that I could not go as a female. I would have to, first of all, say, you know, sign up. That they could not send me. So after a while, I finally joined. And he kept pushing Fort Ord, California, that we had our choice of duty stations, but that was on the beach, you know, gorgeous place. Why don't we sign up for that?
The recruiter tried to talk you out of it.
No. No, my friends.
Oh, your friends
my
were
friends,
trying to talk you out
yes.
of it. Okay.
So I joined, and lo and behold, we got sent to Fort Ord. A month later, I got orders. And to Vietnam, I went to my crew, my head nurse, and I explained it to her that I, you know, I didn't sign up. They can't, you know, I didn't want to go. And she just looked at me and smiled and asked if I, she said, do you have that in writing, Lieutenant? And she says, and did you know that Fort Ord is the staging area for nurses to go to Vietnam? So within a month, the other three nurses had orders. The nurse who talked us into joining when AWOL got pregnant was out, and so the other three of us were sent to sunny Vietnam.
The anti-war demonstrations reached a peak on October 15th, 1969, with a national moratorium. It was the largest outpouring of public dissent in U.S. history. Here's another clip from the Ken Burns Lynn Novick documentary. The first words that you'll hear are anchorman Frank McGee of NBC News, and the last words are the reaction of Vice President Spiro Agnew.
Surely this is a day unique in our history. Never have so many of our people publicly and collectively manifested opposition to this country's involvement in a war. It is unlikely we will remain unchanged. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands in cities from New York with its 8 million people to Du Bois, Wyoming with its 800 people have sought to impress upon the president their opposition to the war.
Shouldn't I let my government know that I think they're crazy? I think they are insane, really. This is an insane thing we're doing. As a matter of fact, Nixon said he will not listen to us and that he will not be dictated to from the people in the streets. The people in the streets are me.
Senator Fulbright said some months ago that if the Vietnam War went on much longer, the best of our young people would be in Canada. For these deserters, malcontents, radicals, incendiaries, the civil and the uncivil disobedience among our young, SDS, PLP, Weatherman 1, Weatherman 2, the Revolutionary Action Movement, Panthers, Lions, Hippies, Yippies, Tigers alike, I'd rather swap the whole damn zoo for a single platoon of the kind of young Americans I saw in Vietnam.
It's Vice President Spiro Agnew reacting to the anti-war demonstrations of the late 60s and early 70s. President Richard Nixon also spoke out forcefully against them in his famous silent majority speech and saw his approval numbers soar to 98%. So Dale and Lynn, the two of you returned eventually. You came home to a divided country. What was that like?
That was what was hard to deal with, because when I got off the plane at McCord Air Base, it was at night and I was walking with another guy. I didn't even know who he was. And there were people on the behind the fence jeering and calling us all kinds of names. And he said to me, "Don't you wish you had our 16? We'd just get rid of them. We'd shut them up," because we didn't care. We had a bad attitude and we just didn't want to tolerate that from people that should be supporting us. I don't regret going there. I don't regret what we did. But it was hard to accept that these people called us names and we had to be afraid when we were flying home on the commercial airlines to even have our fatigues on because of how we would be targeted. So we just got through fighting an enemy. And we didn't fight them because we hated them. We fought them because we fought for people that we loved and people that couldn't fight. And here were the people that we were fighting for, in a sense, in our own country, and they were hating us.
Lynn, you're shaking your head.
Yes. When I got back, they told us to take our uniforms off and throw them in the trash because we didn't want to walk through that door with our uniforms on. Well, so we did, but guess what? They knew who was coming through that door, and we got pummeled with tomatoes anyway. And it's just too bad that people couldn't differentiate between the warrior and the war.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Ray from Rhinelander, you're on Route 51.
Hi, I want to thank you all for everything that you did and your support. I had a good friend who was a combat medic in Vietnam, and of course, all of you knew what they did. I mean, it was horrible, some of the stuff they saw, and they had to choose triage. And my friend, to this day, has nightmares about it, and he said that role was very, very, very important to saving lives and helping lives, and he told me the same story as where they had to treat the enemy first, and he was captured 3 times because he was a valuable commodity to the enemy, and if he didn't treat their wounded, they would kill the prisoners.
Ray, it says on my computer screen that you were at Woodstock. Is that true?
Yes, I was. I was at Woodstock, and I helped build the stage and did stage security. My role at the war at home, I was never against the soldier. Most of my friends weren't either. I had 12 friends, high school buddies, that went to Vietnam in the grinder years. And you people know what I mean. 67, 68, and 69 were the grinder years. And what that means to them is you went over there and you got into the big grinding machine and you got ground up and maybe you got back. But 12 of them went there and 4 came back. And for a class where you have 25, 30 students in it, and you have 12 of them go to something like that, and I'm sorry.
Ray, thanks so much for the phone call, and I appreciate you sharing your comments with us. Let's go to another call. We have Daryl in Couderay. Daryl, you're on Route 51.
Thank you. If one studies history, it does not take long to realize that America has participated in one war or another for 600-plus years, not just on this continent. To me, my personal observation, it seems that war is an American addiction. In war, people take orders. They do right or wrong what they are told to do, but others profit greatly. What always amazes me is how much, as participating citizens in a supposed democracy, reinforce what can only be called what it is, an empire. It continues yet today with the saber rattling by our new president towards North Korea.
Daryl, thank you so much for the phone call. I'm going to get a reaction from our guests. Dale, your reaction to what you heard from Daryl and from Ray.
Well, I'm trying. I don't remember exactly what all was said, but we are, I guess, a nation of people that want to try to help other nations, and I guess it's going to come to a point where we have to, you know, stand back and start looking at what is in the best interests of our country, and kind of deal with that before we start going all over the world and trying to be the policemen in these other countries. So it puts a lot of young lives on the line to have to do some of these things, and you know, I don't know where it's going to stop.
Ray was saying that many of the anti-war demonstrators were upset because they saw their friends, the people they grew up with, going overseas in a war that wasn't being won and not coming back. And Ray said he was opposed to the war, but he wasn't opposed to the warriors. How do you react to that statement?
Well, that's what we would hope. You know, I mean, nobody wants to see war, you know, that. But like Lynn and I were talking about here, you know, we were being targeted as the warriors. You know, if they didn't have, if they had a problem, people had a problem with the war, that's one thing. But don't take it out on the people that put their lives on the line to do, you know, we didn't run from things. We dealt with them, right, wrong, or indifferent. We dealt with them. And you know, so it's just you have to do what you got to do, and I don't think we should be targeted or looked down upon because of what we did.
I want to examine the role of the media played in the war, covering both the fighting overseas and the demonstrations at home. Here's another clip from the Ken Burns Lynn Novick documentary, The Vietnam War. It's a tape recording of President Lyndon Johnson talking to Jack Horner of the Washington Star in February of 1968.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Hi, Jack.
We need guidance this morning, sir.
Guidance? Is that all you want?
Yes, sir.
No quotation?
That's right.
No attribution? No connection?
That's right.
Give it absolutely none.
Absolutely.
Your press is lying like drunken sailors every day. First thing I waked up this morning was trying to figure out, after seeing CBS, watching the networks, reading the morning papers, was how can we win, possibly win, and survive as a nation and have to fight the press's lies?
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to protect my country, and they all whipping me. Not a son of a bitch said a word about Ho Chi Minh. They talk about us bombing. Yet these sons of bitches come in and bomb our embassy, and 19 of them try to raid on. All 19 get killed. And yet they blame the embassy. I don't understand it. We think we've killed 20,000. We think we've lost 400. We think that, of course, it's bad. to lose anybody, any one of the 400. But we think that the good Lord has been so good to us that it is a major, dramatic victory. And I think what would have happened if I'd lost 20,000 and they'd lost 400? I ask you that.
It's President Lyndon Johnson talking to Jack Horner of the Washington Star in February of 1968. We are accustomed to hearing President Trump speak out about what he calls the lying, dishonest press. Here we have a graphic example of another president, Lyndon Johnson, doing the same thing.
Well, the what we were pushed by the media, I think, was pushing some of the politicians as far as they wanted facts, you know, as much as they could from the war. We were pushed to get body count. That was the biggest thing. We were always pushed, you know, you don't have enough body count. You know, you got to get more body count. And that was the thing, and that was what the media I don't know, but we had people that would come to some of our base camps and that and try to get all this information. So, you know, there was always this thing where the media was trying to pump up things or make them look maybe a little different than what they really were.
Lynn Cole, your reaction to the media coverage of the war and what you just heard from Lyndon Johnson.
Well, that's when I realized that our government lies to us. We had a newspaper, the Stars and Stripes, and they would have, like he said, the casualty counts. You know, we lost just this little bit, and the NVA lost all of this. Well, all I had to do was look out the door and look at the number of body bags just at our compound to know that that was a big lie. It seems like they multiplied the NVA and divided ours.
That's right.
And now, Shua Zhang, you were in Laos at the time. You weren't dealing with the anti-war demonstrations. But how did you feel realizing that that was going on in the country that you were supporting in Laos?
During that time, I didn't know the politics, you know, but my father said, yes, he did. Also, my leaders didn't know that during that time they've been trying to fight for the communists and protect our church. And also in that time, after the United States come to recruit us and to help to fight that, after the United States put out of the through bad homes, so that the war is very, very hard for us to lost the country and lost many soldiers, bad homes, and nobody helped there. We don't have a food, we don't have a weapon to fight with them, and they catch our leader and includes our king is put in a jail. And
yeah, your king was put in a jail.
Yeah, my king is put in a jail, and a lot there. Leaders and put in jail too, and we did not don't have information until today, so we don't know that the communists did that. And during that time, it's very hard for us.
So you were suffering your own problems with the media in Laos.
Yes,
we're previewing the Ken Burns and Lynn Novick documentary on the Vietnam War with combat vet and platoon sergeant Dale Lindwall of Wausau, Evacuation Hospital Army nurse Lynn Kalmus Cole of the Village of Maine, and president of the Wisconsin Lao Veterans of America, Lieutenant Now Shua Zhang of Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to take a short break. Here's Victor Lundberg with his top 10 hit from 1967. It was called An Open Letter to My Teenage Son.
Now, I would remind you that your mother will love you no matter what you do, because she is a woman. And I love you too, son. But I also love our country and the principles for which we stand. And if you decide to burn your draft card, then burn your birth certificate at the same time. From that moment on, I have no son.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, with activities for the family at Kilbourne City Live Music and Arts Festival, September 30th. More is at wisdells.com. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world.
Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer and Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer and Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Edwin Starr's number one Motown hit from 1970, taking us into our final segment of Route 51 as we continue our conversation with combat vet and platoon sergeant Dale Lindwall, Evacuation Hospital Army nurse Lynn Kalmus-Cole, and president of the Wisconsin Lao Veterans of America, now Shua Zhang. I'm Glenn Moberg. We've been playing hit records from the Vietnam War years, and it's probably amazing to some younger listeners how the war itself played out in the popular media. Back then, we had Top 40 radio. Everybody listened to the same station, and all you had to do is have a hit record, and it got played. We heard Frank Sinatra followed by a punk rock song on these stations, and you could actually see the war in Vietnam and the different opinions playing out in popular culture.
Well, we didn't have the option of listening to any radio. I mean, we were in the jungle most of the time. So, like I say, we would hear from letters and so forth from family and friends about some of the songs that were popular and so forth and how they kind of lent to what we were doing. But that's about all we knew.
Dale, in your biography that you sent me, you wrote, "I still deal with the demons of war and seek help from a psychiatrist through the VA semi-annually. The Land of Nine Dragons left me with a lifelong scar and memories that only another Vietnam vet can relate to." Can you expound on that?
Well, it's as we talked about and as Lynn mentioned, you know, you became hardened to what was going on. We were a combat unit. And so we were involved in a lot of different things going on that you had to put aside, and you just had to look at your mission and you had to go on. But in later years when this all cropped up, you know, then you got to deal with it. And I've had issues that I have to stay in touch with a person that can help me stay mentally focused. And it becomes difficult sometimes because it seems so real, and it's just hard to deal with.
Now, Shua Zhang, you eventually left Laos. I think it was in 1982. You crossed the Mekong River and made it to Thailand, and then eventually made it to Wausau. It must have been difficult for you coming over here. It was in December, if I recall. It's very cold. You didn't have winters in Laos the way we have it. What were you wearing at the time?
Yeah, during that time, so let me back in a little bit my records. When in my veterans, we talked about earlier, he passed away and many soldiers passed away. So I decided to take my family and many friends to escape to Thailand and for safety all life. But we don't know how to swim in, you know, and we usually live in a mountain or a Laos and not. You know, and so it's very hard for us to get swimming in the Mekong River. But we tried to put in.
Many died swimming the Mekong River,
right,
trying to get to Thailand.
Yes, many, many people died. And usually in the younger people and the older people, they didn't die a lot because they don't know how to swim in. And as if you use the bamboo and three in a. Left side, three in the right side. You had to know how to swim a little bit. If you don't know, there's sometimes turn you over.
And you were all roped together, which...
roped together.
In order to connect. And the strongest swimmer in the front.
Yes.
And you made it to Wausau.
Are you happy
living in Wausau now?
Yeah, I'm happy living in Wausau and 27 years ago. But when I reached Wausau, and that's the winter. It's very, very cold, and I didn't see the snow, and that's a real surprise.
You had to learn an entire new culture, learn how to dress, and here you and your family are thriving.
Yeah.
Dale, you formed your own company, Stainless Specialists, and were quite a success. Lynn, you worked as a nurse. You worked in the medical profession when you got back, and now you've got a lot of kids and grandkids. What have we learned from Vietnam, if anything? That's something we're still grappling with, Lynn.
Well, I'm not sure we learned anything, as you can see, because we continue to get into the wars.
We're still fighting wars.
What surprised me, I ended up talking at schools for a while, and also the university here, because there's only like one paragraph on Vietnam in the history books. How can you learn anything if, you know, from your past mistakes,
if you're not teaching
if it's
them.
If you don't even know about it?
Hopefully people learn something today. Thank you all for being with us today. We want to thank today's guests, Army Combat Vet and Platoon Sergeant Dale Lindwall of Wausau, Evacuation Hospital Army Nurse Lynn Kalmus Cole of the Village of Maine, and the President of the Wisconsin Lao Veterans of America, Lieutenant Nao Shua Zhang of Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Merle Haggard, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Bob Dylan, Sergeant Barry Sandler, Country Joe and the Fish, Paul McCartney, Victor Lundberg, Edwin Starr, and John Lennon. A reminder that the one-hour preview of the Ken Burns and Lynn Novick documentary, The Vietnam War, will be shown tonight, Thursday night at 7 o'clock, followed by a panel discussion at the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement. And while you're there, we invite you to view our display, A Face for Every Name, a tribute to our Wisconsin men and women who lost their lives in the war. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town. Yeah.